We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
No, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HG1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Like we were talking about, too many levels of Little League World Series interest. Like, you want to put the championship game up? That's fine. I don't need round robin quarterfinals from, you know, 38 teams starting the tournament. Anyways,
speak for yourself, Damon. I have no interest in the final.
Russ Ortiz, former Giants pitcher, an all-star, NL wins leader. This is a guy who knows an awful lot about pitching with a heavy heart, because the Giants asked him to take the ball after 9/11. And obviously today is a day that has an awful lot of conversation, memories, pain attached to it. The beauty of sports being part of the vehicles that we took to heal ourselves of this moment and the role that baseball played in it. We're very happy to catch up with Russ Ortiz here on 95.7 The Game on the Damon Bruce Show. I've got Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. Russ, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate taking your time today and telling such a personal story, which of all the major league starts you made, does this one still stand out to you as different than the others?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be on. I appreciate it. I think besides my, probably my first major league, you know, appearance and the major league start, I think it's one of those starts that, really meant a whole lot. You know, even pitching the World Series, like, that was cool and awesome and all that stuff. But when you're talking about really something that means something, you know, getting to pitch the first game after 9/11 happened, you know, was a real special thing. And, yeah, something definitely would never forget.
Was it weird the whole night, or did it just start weird? I mean, because the attack happened a week before the schedule resumed. So did it just feel awkward at first, or did you feel sort of, as well as you pitched, did you feel out of sorts the whole night because of what had happened the week before?
Not really. I mean, I just remember, you know, they're, you know, they had us around the infield and all that. And I wanted to participate in all that, because realistically, you know, my normal routine would have been to be stretching and, you know, getting loose and all that stuff. But I was just like, you know what, this is bigger than that. And, you know, because, you know, a lot of times, like even in playoffs, World Series, whatever, pitcher, catcher, pitching coach, all that, they're all over. They're out on the outfield or in the bullpen, you know, when they're announcing players and stuff like that. And so I just remember that was one thing. I just wanted to be a part of that and, you know, try to have my routine work around that, you know, make sure I was ready to go right into warming up and stuff. And so it was just an emotional time. And, you know, I mean, and one of the things I thought was great is the fact that we were able to get back to business, that the people, the fans that were there were able to get back to being fans. You know, kind of helped take your mind off of what just happened. And I mean, we were in Houston when it happened, and, you know, NASA is there in Houston. And so there was a level of concern, in Houston. And so, you know, and I was a player rep at the time. And so there's, you know, being a part of all that and everything, you know, there was a level of concern. And if, you know, trying to get us out of there as soon as possible and then get into the game, it was just, you know, getting back to normal, you know, trying to get back to normal and all that. And that's what we do as professionals. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on with your families, with your homes, around the country, all that stuff. But as professionals, you know, we have a job to do, and our job, part of our job, is to entertain. And and the people that come to the games, you know, it's for it, to entertain them, you know, with the things that we tried to perfect, you know, the skills that we try to perfect. And so it was weird in the sense of that this it was not a normal, you know, pre-game routine or ceremony. But I will say that it meant more, you know, than probably any other, you know, ceremony except for maybe my first opening day.
Were there guys at that time? I mean, like you said, obviously everyone had to do their job, but was there discussion about, you know, should we even go out here tonight?
No, because I think one of the things is at the time President Bush was kind of wanting Major League Baseball to get back on the field, you know, to get back to a sense of normalcy.
Yeah.
And you know, we understood, you know, just the massive tragedy and the seriousness of everything. And then when it kind of, you know, we in a sense got all clear to travel and, you know, was able to just go out and play, you know, everybody filled stadiums and stuff like that. You know, and I think just having the sense that, you know, you have the president and then Major League Baseball and the ownership, everybody was just like, you know, we'd love to just get back to doing what we love to do. And having, you know, like I said, be able to give the fans something to feel, you know, like things are somewhat back to normal as best we can. I mean, that was, I think, that whole night for me was like, this is our job. Our job tonight is to go out and give the fans for the next, you know, let's say 3 hours, something that they can cheer about, you know, cheer about, and that can excite them, that can, you know, maybe in a sense have all of us just put that aside for a second. And then we'll reflect more afterwards. You know, we got to reflect before the game, and then we play the game, and then we can reflect more. And I think it was important for us to get back out there as soon as possible for those reasons. You know, to be able to, because it's really, you know, it's tough. That whole week was tough. I mean, you know, just understanding what went on. And so, so I was glad that we got back out there. But it was a tough situation to have to be a part of. But again, you know, we're professionals, and that's kind of what we're called to do, and when we need to do it. And you know, so I think we all, both teams, every team in the major leagues, did a great job of that, just going out and playing our butts off and entertaining.
Russ Ortiz. Russ, appreciate it, Russ, here on 95.7 The Game. So sports, without a doubt, you know, help the nation heal. And regardless of what you think of anyone's politics, what do you think it meant that George Bush threw a perfect strike that night at Yankee Stadium? Like, I don't know what he was as a president, but I don't know if any president could have done a better job throwing that first pitch, right?
That was awesome. I mean, I know I loved it. No matter who the president, you know, was at the time, for any president to go up there from the pitching rubber, and throw basically a perfect pitch, that kind of helped set the tone. You know, I mean, that was the thing. It's like, let's go, let's get back to this. You know, and it was kind of the feeling of, you know, we're not defeated here. You know, we're going to be able to get back to normal, and we're going to, you know, people are going to repair. I would say that really helped a lot of people. I know that helped us as baseball players, because it was kind of like the first pitch all over again, for, you know, just, all right, here we go again. We're going to start all over here. And so that was just kind of like that. But I mean, there was this great understanding of, there is a lot of people that lost their lives, and there's a lot of family members that are hurting still, that maybe a lot of them have no thought of going to a baseball game or wanted to be entertained. And so that was one thing that I want to make sure that everybody understands that we understood all that. We understood that there's people that are really hurting, and that's something that, you know, we weren't going to forget about that. I really, his hearts were heavy and everything. And I'm not going to say it was easy just to forget about it and go out there and play. But like I said, you know, our job as professionals, no matter if there's something going on around us or in our own lives, you know, when it's, you know, when you cross those lines, it's, hey, you got to do you have a job to do.
A unique moment, certainly. Russ, thank you very much for sharing some thoughts from that night. We do appreciate it. And we wish you the very, very best, man. Thanks for going down memory lane with us on an unbelievable night for sports. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Love it. Love it.
Russ Ortiz here on 95.7 The Game. So it was an unbelievable night. It was an unbelievable moment, obviously. 18 years ago, I know where I was. I was on the air that morning in Connecticut, not too far away from so many people who were commuting to Manhattan to go to work. And, you know, I think everyone has elements that they take away from that day. I remember all the cars that they showed sitting in like the New Canaan train station that were cars that were, people were never going to get in those cars again because the people weren't getting on the train to come back to those cars in that moment and in that day. And I was doing traffic on the radio for a number of different stations. And I remember watching the very first plane hit. And you didn't see that, but you saw the ramification. And then when I heard like, oh, plane hit the World Trade Center, I assumed it was like a goofy ultralight, some weird Manhattan rich guy took his personal puddle jumper and made a huge mistake. And then you saw something and I said, my goodness, that looked like a missile. And as I said missile, the second airplane came in and I remember getting on the phone and calling all the morning zoo radio stations that I was saying, I was like, wrap up whatever wacky routine you're doing right now because the United States is under attack and I don't know any more than that, but wrap it up. It was an unbelievable moment. I'm interested in Ray, where you were, Matt, what you were doing that day, how sports helped save the moment. 888-957-9570 is the number. When we do, oh, well, you know what, though? How about this? Just to, we will get back to this moment, but just for some levity, just for some levity, let's do a little name game. We scheduled a name game coming up next. Let's do that next. 888-957-9570. A name game, a name from sports, two first names, and here's what it could win for you today. It's your choice. Do you want to go to a huge Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer, gargantuan concert that's coming to Oracle Park next summer? Or would you rather see The Machine, Bert Kreischer, at the Warfield tomorrow night?
Shirtless Bert Kreischer. It's an experience unlike any other.
There you go. So it is choose your own prize if you can come up with the name that gets you the name game today. 888-957-9570. Green Day tickets? Bert Kreischer tickets? How often do you get that choice in life? We're playing the name game next here on 95.7 The Game. Hello, Elena.
Hey, what's happening on The Game? Brought to you by Chilton. Brought to you by Ticket Crushers. 49ers spending the week smack dab in the middle of Heartland. Why? They're getting ready to face the Bengals on Sunday in Cincinnati. Running back Tevin Coleman will miss a few weeks with a high ankle sprain. So with Coleman out, Matt Breida is stepping up in his absence. Breida joined Damon Radon-Winkowski a little bit earlier, but if you missed it, we'll be playing it back at 5:10 today. You can also find it on demand at 95.7thegame.com or stream on the go using the radio.com app. Special programming alert, 49er GM John Lynch joining Joe Lowe and Dibs tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. set your alarms. We're playing the name game next. The winner gets a choice between Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer tickets. That's coming up next summer. Or you can go see The Machine tomorrow night at the Warfield. You get the choice if you get the name. Sponsored by Ticket Crushers. Got a ticket, suspended license, DUI? Don't pay. Let the attorneys at Ticket Crushers go to court for you and crush that ticket for as little as $149. Ticket Crushers knows how to win. Call 866-TICKET-HELP. That's 866-TICKET-HELP for a free consultation. I'm Elena Matsoukas in the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
All right, it's officially time. Here's something that we've never done. We've never gave you the opportunity to win the tickets that you think fit your life, lifestyle, and entertainment values better. Then what do you want? Green Day tickets with Fall Out Boy and Weezer? They're playing July 21st, 2020. So this is happening next summer, but this concert is going to be so big at Oracle Park, tickets aren't even on sale yet. You can win these tickets before they even go on sale. It's going to be a huge concert next summer. If you get our name game answer today, or you can go see Bert Kreischer tomorrow at the Warfield. That is September 12th, tomorrow night. So you get to choose your own adventure if you correctly choose today's name for the name game. Again, we're looking for two first names from the world of sports, as the Open tells you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
the name game.
Starring anyone with two first names.
What's your name?
My name?
Dirt first. It's a funny name.
What'd you say his name was again?
His name is Ricky. Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby. He's got two first names.
Now, here's your host with two first names, Damon Bruce.
All right, here we go. Here we go. A sequence of yes or no questions. That's how we find out who wins today's name game. We'll begin with Chase. Chase, you're in Fremont. Thank you very much for the call. What is your yes or no question?
Does this player play in the NFL?
Yes.
Is he on the 49ers?
No. Thank you very, very much. We go to Luke El Sobrante next in line. Luke, what is your question?
Is he on the Cincinnati Bengals?
Yes.
Is it John Ross?
No. Thank you very, very much. Julius Castro Valley, your yes or no question.
Is he a quarterback?
Yes.
Is it
Julius? Julius, I'm sorry. We're not waiting for your follow-up question.
Yeah, but you can't Google live on the air.
No, I can hear how stupid you really are while you're Googling it. No, I'm kidding. You're not stupid, but you're cheating. So we move on to Carlos and San Bruno. Carlos, what is your yes or no question?
Is it Andy Dalton?
Oh, my goodness.
Come on, people.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
You'd think of all these weeks we'd put on a correct buzzer on my page. We've never done it, not once. There we go. Congratulations, Carlos. I'm going to put you on hold. Wait, Carlos, I got to ask you, what do you want? Do you want the Megatour Green Day Fall Out Boy Weezer tickets for next summer? Or do you want to go see The Machine Bert Kreischer tomorrow at the Warfield?
Well, I have to work tomorrow, so I'm taking Green Day in the summer.
Boom. Carlos, I'm going to put you on hold. Congratulations, you are going. You're among the first to have tickets to this concert, which they're not even on sale yet. I can't even tell you to go online and buy them right now. They're not even on sale yet, but Carlos has a pair. Congratulations. People are officially on to us. I think they realize that it's going to be a name from something happening that week. It's not just going to be randomly selected.
Yeah, good, because the days when we had 15 people ask the same question weren't that great.
No, it's probably better to get it over quickly.
It's good to have smart listeners,
you
know?
And carry it on and on and on and on like a run-on sentence, and we move on. 888-957.
Subtly done.
Thank you. 888-957-9570 is the number. A little bit later on, we've already said hello to Matt Breida today. Really interesting conversation with him. We'll have a smidge of that for you coming up when we move on to our 5 o'clock hour. Kevin Durant, ladies and gentlemen, is back in our lives. It's because he's back talking. He's back tweeting. He's back talking about who did him wrong, what didn't fit. When will it fit? I guess that's my question. He fit himself into a column in the Wall Street Journal, and we have Kevin Durant airing, I'm not going to call it dirty laundry, but talking about leaving for the very first time, what he's doing now and all this. And I got to be honest with you, I am really looking forward to an NBA season where he will be nothing more than a small story. I'm good. I'm ready to have a year of basketball without Kevin Durant and his shadow just casting all over an entire year. Like, I'm good with it. I'm ready for it. I'm going to be happier about it. I don't know if it's going to be better basketball, but it'll be a better conversation because we won't get stuck on one guy who never really seemed that happy to begin with about anything.
I think he's been relatively happy. I think what it is, though, he's always looking for something else. And it's been true, really, since he went to Texas. Because he stayed there briefly, got drafted by Seattle, that then got moved with the rest of the franchise. I think what he wants changes. And I don't think that's unusual. I think a lot of people who don't think a lot of about their situation just want the same thing over and over again. And if it's not championships, you wonder what it is. I think with him, it's, I experienced this. I want something else. Now I've experienced something else. Now I want a third thing. And I don't think that necessarily makes him a bad guy, except when he looks back in the rearview mirror and finds himself focusing on the things that didn't make him happy in the end. And I think that's the one thing that you can make a case for. It doesn't bother me that he goes to Brooklyn for an entirely different experience. It's that I don't think he's able to sort of process all the good stuff and all the bad stuff into something that sounds more coherent to me.
Can't get over anything.
I think that might be a little simplistic, but Matt, speak.
I don't really want to.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think I have anything to say about this that we haven't been around 30 times. And all the people were going to call me naive and soft on the text line and Twitter, and I just don't care. I think people who have judged Kevin Durant's happiness are, they have no idea what they're talking about. And I don't think anything he said in this article reflects anything other than a thoughtful person thinking about his circumstances and talking about them more openly than almost any athlete we've ever had. And you know, the fact that his willingness to share his uncertainties and his I mean, he says in there he's searching. But I'll go a step further than you, Ray, because I think you were trying to be polite, but people already hate me about this issue, so what do I care? You know who doesn't want new experiences and doesn't think about their situation and doesn't seek personal growth? Idiots and bad people. That's who. What? Smart, thoughtful people. This is the way they think about their lives. And the just the fact that people want to crush Kevin Durant for the way he shares his thoughts and feelings, it's so dumb to me. And it's so antithetical to what many of these same people say they want out of athletes. That just, I don't get it.
What they say they want out of athletes and what they really want out of athletes are two different things.
Yeah, they're lying.
And I think you and I are in concert here.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Durant experienced the Warriors. And in the end, he got everything he wanted except a bad Achilles. And then he said, now I want to do something else.
Yep.
It's an odd way to approach things, but it's only odd to us because we don't experience it very much. the stuff that causes me to stop for a second is things like, I don't think the Warrior offense is sustainable. And I think the last 5 years shows, well, yeah, it is sustainable if you have the kind of players who can do that. And he was one of those players. So it's not like he couldn't be part of a motion offense in which the ball moved a lot. I think in the end, he wanted, okay, I did that. Now I want to do something other than else, where I'm the first option rather than one of many, or as it was in Oklahoma City, where he became the second option because Russell Westbrook always insisted on being the first. So I don't have a problem with, you know, him, you know, sort of wearing his, not dissatisfactions, but his sort of endless search for new experiences on his sleeve. It's sometimes he gets too sort of Kevin-centric.
If you're Kevin Durant, how did you let Russell Westbrook take over a franchise when you're Kevin Durant? Because, like, why didn't you just refuse that? Why didn't you go to the front office? It's amazing. What Kevin Durant seeks was available for him.
Hold on.
What Kevin Durant seeks was available to him in Oklahoma City, and he left it. And then might have been available to him here with the Warriors, but he decided to leave it. He always resets the same problem for himself right when he might be actually approaching the answer to what ails him, or the solution to maybe being a little bit happier. Like,
you're saying things and taking them as facts that I just do not believe are true at all. And
well,
you seem
I disagree
to be
with you. I think this is very true. I think it's very easy to see an unhappy, always pouting, sulking, forever malevolent superstar.
What percentage of Kevin Durant's life do you feel like you've witnessed?
A pretty decent amount for a guy who covers sports for a living.
I, again, think that's incredibly naive to think you've witnessed a decent amount of Kevin Durant's life. You just haven't.
I mean, I've listened to podcasts that he's been on and read more articles about him. I've read half a book about him. I have done an awful lot of paying attention to Kevin Durant than I have, say, John Sally. Like, I cover sports. I'm allowed to have opinions and form opinions about these things.
Of course you are. I'm just asking what percentage of his actual life you feel like you've witnessed to know that he is an unhappy person.
Well, it's like saying, you know, because he never really talked to Donald Trump, he can't tell he's a prick.
No, it's nothing like that.
I mean, no,
Donald
I just
Trump
think
has been a prick, factually speaking, over and over again, countless times throughout his entire life. Kevin Durant's personal happiness is an incredibly difficult thing to judge based on
the totality. No, it's not. He's always unhappy all the time. He's showing you he's unhappy all the time. Like, this was a story in the Wall Street Journal about leaving Golden State, and it's all about now.
Actually, that's not what it's about.
It turned into Oklahoma City. I've never been attached. I'll never be attached to that city again because of that. I'll eventually want to come back to that city to be part of the community, but I don't trust nobody there. It must have been fake. That's what I was doing. Like, come on,
why,
man.
He's constantly
talking about wanting a real relationship, but there is no real relationship, and someone says,
that's factually not true. He did not talk about that.
He's tweeting with this guy right here. I have Kevin Durant's Twitter account right here, going back and forth with the guy saying, that's my problem. You thought we were dating. Again, like, he wants to be loved and then says, don't love me. And then it's just.
You are reading things that happen and then you're drawing conclusions.
That's what we do.
But your conclusions are not fact. And I think they're wrong.
No, but my opinion is worth an awful lot of money. So I'm giving it to you.
I'm
telling you right now that Kevin Durant, I don't think he's ever going to be happy from basketball. I don't think there's anything in basketball that will ever leave him really, really happy, because he seems to have a problem with every step of a career, no matter which direction he steps in. More about a team, less about a team, more about me. I'm more on the radar. I'm off the radar. I am a leader. I'm not a leader. He's always moving his own goalposts. And when you want to say something about anything he does, it's, well, you know, I love Twitter, he says. For a guy who loves Twitter, he doesn't seem to really like Twitter.
Except you're
the way
taking
that
totally out of context. He completely explained that. Just like he explained a lot
calm
of
down,
the things
down,
you just
calm
referenced.
Down.
Well, but you're
I know you love making excuses for Kevin Durant.
You're right. That's what
you
this
do.
Is about.
You do.
I'm about to do an incredibly stupid thing, but I'm going to take one thing that you've said and dispute it, which is that he could have taken over Oklahoma City at any point. When in fact, Clay Bennett made it clear up until the day that Westbrook was traded to Houston, that Russell Westbrook was the center of that team because Clay Bennett wanted it to be, Sam Presti wanted it to be. So Kevin Durant didn't imagine that, and you cannot suddenly declare yourself the center of a team when all of your superiors say, no, we've built this team around Russell Westbrook. I think that was the ultimate, that was where his dissatisfaction lied in Oklahoma City. I don't think we really know how satisfied or dissatisfied he was in Oakland, but he liked it for a while. He liked it while they were winning, but it wasn't a perfect fit. Maybe he's a guy who's looking for a perfect fit, and maybe this is not about him being unhappy. Maybe it's him trying to examine how many ways he can experience basketball. Does going to Brooklyn make sense to me? Not particularly, but it's not my call. And not only is it not my call, it makes sense if you can decide that Kevin Durant is more curious than he is satisfied. Because I think that's what we're talking. I don't think he's unhappy. I think he's curious about other situations, and if he does have a fault, it's that he thinks about stuff more than probably is healthy for anybody, but that's just speculation on my part. I just don't believe that he's unhappy. I believe that he wants to experience new things, and I think he experienced all of the Warriors that he wanted to experience.
How many tanks do I have to put you in for you to stop being the fish out of water?
I don't know. I don't.
Why
know
does
what
he have
means.
To conform?
I don't.
It's a metaphor, Matt.
For what?
It means there is no situation that fits him. He's
what do you
changed
mean,
it radically.
What does it mean to, for a situation to fit him? Because as far as I can tell, we're what 13 years into Kevin Durant's career, and it's one of the best careers in the history of basketball. And all these things that are, well, clearly he can't handle that, or, well, clearly he's a, and all that he does, while people talk about what he can and can't handle, is dominate the league. And other than an Achilles injury, we'd be talking about probably his third straight NBA Finals MVP.
Could dominate the league, but
couldn't
get the ball from Russ. Dominates the league.
You're right.
It's Russ's team.
But you're just saying things that have no basis in reality and are meaningless. Like if you think a reasonable criticism of Kevin Durant is he didn't steal the ball from Russell Westbrook, like I don't know what we're talking about. I really don't.
I don't think he needed to steal the ball to be the focal point.
Really?
No.
Because he was on the court being Kevin Durant, doing all the things Kevin Durant does, and Russell Westbrook still dominated the ball and didn't give it to him enough.
And then he went to an organization that put him in a position to win a championship, almost rolling out of bed. They shared the ball with him to the point where a unanimous MVP was sacrificing, and he still felt, I'm not one of the guys. I'm not enough. It's not enough about me. Know what I mean? No. That absolutely happened. If Russ wouldn't share the ball, he then comes to a team that does share the ball.
Correct.
And then that doesn't fit.
And they won. What do you mean doesn't fit?
He was leaving at the end of this year because they shared the ball too much.
No.
He needed to go be the...
Because he wanted to do something else. And you deciding that because his decision-making processes don't mimic yours, that because he wants to do stuff that you, given his position, wouldn't want to do, that he must be miserable or unsolvable or he's never satisfied. And I just reject that.
I just think you can't say it's all about my basketball legacy and then rebuke your own chances to win titles by stepping away from that situation and then say it's all about my legacy. I mean,
I don't think he said that.
It doesn't make sense.
I don't think he ever said it's all about my legacy. In fact, we've just gone through the three or four things he laid out in this article that it was about. And he talks about wanting to experience different things. He talks about wanting to play with his best friend in the league, in Kyrie. He talks about a variety of things. And again, you might not think they're good reasons, but I am not ready to make or acknowledge that it's reasonable to make the jump from I don't understand his decision-making process to he must be miserable. It just doesn't follow for me.
I think it's as clear as day.
But there's nothing. But what is that? Again, I don't know what that means. It's clear as day. Like, he's not saying he's miserable. He just...
You don't need to say it.
Right.
He doesn't need to say it. Like, Dennis Rodman doesn't need to say he's miserable. I can tell. That guy is miserable.
I think Kevin Durant is a wild comparison.
Well, it's because I saw it last night. It's just recency bias.
I would have been interested to see how you compared it to Andre the Giant if that's the documentary you saw last night.
Andre the Giant was so self-assured and happy and confident in who he was and wasn't looking to redefine the path of his own life at all times. Like, he knew
he was the biggest man in his room.
No, I did. He was, dude, Andre
well,
the
how
Giant
did you documentary watch that documentary was and not come away with the misery involved in his life. That documentary was half about how miserable Andre the Giant was.
Oh, it was rough at the end, but he loved wrestling. He was happy. He wanted to be the main event at every event. And when he made the choice to let Hogan slam him, like, he knew it was good for the game and it had to be done, and he needed to transfer power from one person to the next. Like, it was a beautiful story. It was tragic in its beauty. It was great.
I hate Kevin Durant topics.
I'm glad we have a basketball season without him coming. There's a lot more interest than just him.
I'm not. He's one of the best players in the league, and every minute of his career that we lose is a bummer.
I think every minute of his career kind of felt like a little bit of a bummer, even though they were enjoying a comic level of success. This is Tish in Hercules. What do you got, Tish?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I agree 150% with Kolsky. I love you, Damon, and congratulations, by the way, on being a father. The thing is, just because someone changes career or job, and the NBA is their job, it doesn't mean they're unhappy. It doesn't mean they hate anyone, although I personally can understand why someone would hate Russell Westbrook. KD is probably like me. I've been working for about 30 years. I've made many job changes. But it doesn't mean that I hate the job I had. It means that if a headhunter calls me with a new challenge and I want to pursue it, often I go to my current management and I say, hey, I love it here, but I want to try this new challenge. Here's why. I keep in touch with past coworkers, et cetera. It's a false argument to assume that because someone wants to move on from where they are, they're unhappy. Your job should not dictate your happiness in life, and your curiosity to try something new, if you're an ambitious, curious person, shouldn't be held against you. I feel that KD did what we wanted him to do, which is to help us win. I don't care if he was always cheerful. I don't care if he was strange sometimes. He did what we wanted him to do, and I agree with Kolsky. I think we all agree that but for the injury, and then Clay's injury, we'd probably be looking at another championship. We would have gotten to the three-peat. And if he had left after the three-peat, I would have understood it. So I just resent how people vilify KD for doing what he's entitled to do in the position he was in, which was make a choice to move on. He didn't slight us in any way. I'm very unhappy he left, but I still consider him one of the best teammates. And also I'm glad his jersey will be up in the rafter. Hopefully, you know, he'll be honored for years to come. I plan to stand up and give him an ovation.
Oh, look, he'll get a standing ovation coming back here. The guy helped win amazing moments of basketball, MVP finals, and geez, it's just the whole thing's amazing to me. It really is. I mean, how many times does a guy have to tell you he's dissatisfied before you start saying, well, there's someone who just can't find any satisfaction? 888-957-9570. Dissatisfied with the way college players are being represented. Draymond Green is out in front of this. The state of California might get out in front of this. And when it comes to blowing things up in sports, I wouldn't mind blowing up the NCAA. Is the state of California even closer to that? We're coming back with that. More NFL around the corner as well in our 5 o'clock hour. Don't you go anywhere. Courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
What do the odds mean? So normally when you go ahead and you win a football game, the chances of you going to the playoffs increase exponentially. And Vegas knows that and they realize that. And even when bad teams win in week one, their chances of winning the Super Bowl usually increase. As a matter of fact, the only teams whose chances of winning the Super Bowl decrease or stay the same are the teams that lose. With the exception of one weird one this week. And it just shows you how brutal the Raiders' schedule is going to be. I think we all agree that the Raiders were a little impressive on Monday night. They looked pretty darn good. They are among a group of teams that all lost that didn't see their chances to win a Super Bowl increase due to what they have coming up. The Oakland Raiders started 100-1 to win a Super Bowl. They are now 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. The teams that stayed the same or got worse all lost. The Broncos, the Lions, the Giants, the Bengals, the Buccaneers, the Redskins, and the Dolphins are all with them on losing streak, but they are the ones that win, that won in week one. For the 49ers, who are probably not a very good Super Bowl bet at 40-1, they're now 25-1. Hopefully you got them at 40-1 if you think they're going far. That's the value you want.
Yeah, but the 49ers are also a fairly public team. And so when they do well, the odds jump.
People like the nun. They like the brand.
They like to bet the 49ers when they're doing well. They don't like to fade them. They'll either bet them or they'll ignore them. As far as the Raiders go, I think a lot of that is a function of beating Denver doesn't solve the problem of how do you get around the Patriots. Because the Patriots are as close to a prohibitive favorite.
And the Chiefs.
Well, the Patriots are the team that basically. I don't think you could get a good number on the Chiefs beating the Patriots in the AFC title game. I think for the most part, the assumption, if you're betting the AFC at all, is that the Patriots are clearly the best team.
Patriots opened 8-1. They're now 4-1. Kansas City Chiefs opened 8-1. They're now 7-1.
Yeah. See, I mean, I think public teams get more action, and New England is very much a public team. Sorry about
careful
that.
Careful there.
Ray choking.
No, just tuberculosis.
Oh.
I think when you look at odds,
just a spot
without
of black
taking
lung.
Into account all the factors that make the numbers move, you just get a false read. It's just the Patriots are always going to get a ton of money when they beat a team the way they beat Pittsburgh, and the 49ers will jump whenever they win because people in the Bay Area like to go down to Vegas or Reno and bet them.
I think the question you asked to open the segment is one of the most dangerous questions in sports. What does the line mean? Because it means a lot, man. I mean, look, the casino's trying to set it to get even money, and then how they do that depends on reads they're getting from sharp bettors and where public money has been going this year. And there's so many factors that go into it, and really none of them are game analysis whatsoever. Like, as soon as you start trying to figure out what lines mean, you're probably heading down a dangerous road.
Well, but the lines aren't meant to evaluate football. They're meant
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But I want to finish. They're not meant to evaluate football, but they are done by people who know football because they've seen it in that framework for years. So it's not like they're not reflecting football. They are reflecting football in a different way than football fans reflect football.
Well, then let me ask you another little something to reflect on. You tell me how this bounces off you, all right? Here's a question that is a loaded question.
Yay, I like being loaded.
What if Kevin Durant were really happy? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. What if Andy Dalton drops back 56 times in week two. By the way, that sounds like a premise that you could open a movie with. Like, you could take that anywhere. What if Andy Dalton drops back 56 times to throw the ball in week two? What would you assume is happening? What would you want to see in that scenario?
I don't care. I don't have a want to see thing. But what I assume is that they're behind, and or Joe Mixon got hurt, or more likely both, because 56 is a ton of throws, but even in this era, 56 is a lot.
It's a ton.
It's a lot.
And teams that are ahead aren't throwing 56 times. I mean, New Orleans, when they were at the height of their offensive powers, they didn't throw 56 times when they were ahead. They just didn't. So if he throws 56 times, if you bet the 49ers, you should be pleased.
That is a good inference. I think you could absolutely interpret it that way. When I hear 56 times, I think that's how Cincinnati lost by one last week. I mean, it wasn't like they were chasing the dragon that hard, right? They were in shouting distance of that game pretty much throughout the entire game.
I think in that game, it's more about the second thing Ray said, the fact that they lost their running back.
And Mixon was ineffective. Yeah, very ineffective.
Well, he was absent for much
of it. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
the real problem
was over.
Yeah, the problem is the Bengals don't have a lot of options in their current state.
That's the
without
truth.
Mixon, without A.J. Green, I mean, look,
they got Ross and Boyd. That's about it.
But is Ross really a guy you're going to look at and say that guy's going for 7 and 150 every week?
No, he's just a guy you're going to throw it at over and over again because he's what you have.
12 targets.
Well, yeah, he and Boyd were, you know.
He gets to be A.J. Green until A.J. Green can be A.J. Green again.
Pretty much.
But, I mean, you know, look, we know Giovanni Bernard is not a game changer.
No, he killed me fantasy a couple years ago.
Yeah. And so Dalton has to throw 51 times just to keep it close, just to have a chance. You know, and that tells me that you know, they were in deep for a long time, and they were.
I would love to see this pass rush get 56 shots at Andy Dalton.
Agreed.
That is, you know, like, where do you want to take that sentence? If he dropped back 56 times, what would you like to say? I would love to see Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead and company get 56, lick the chops. We're not even worried about the running game. We're coming after you, Andy Dalton. There's a sample size I could get behind.
Oh, they'll be exhausted then. I'm not sure you really actually want that.
Well, then maybe Solomon Thomas gets out there and has a chance to look halfway decent. I
you
mean,
know
he
what?
Is the human rest for the rest of the defensive line, is he
maybe,
not?
Maybe, but asking guys to pass rush 56 times.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I get the general the general theory.
Yeah.
But all they really have to be is ahead by two scores, and it doesn't really matter how they get there as long as they keep Cincinnati at arm's length. And the rest of it is just it's just eye candy at that point. Because as long as you beat Cincinnati, whether or not you beat the hell out of Andy Dalton is irrelevant.
Well, let's talk about what beating Cincinnati would mean. Okay.
more than you'd imagine.
Look, it's when I saw these numbers, I couldn't believe it. When's the last time you think the Niners, unless you looked this up right and you got it right in your fingertips, when's the last time you thought the Niners started 2-0?
I would guess it was like 2012.
Yep, you got it. It's 2012. Still several years ago. That's 7 seasons ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
7 years is officially a long time to start 2-0. When's the last time you think the 49ers started 2-0 with both those games on the road?
Oh, that's
started their year 2-0 with two games away from, well, Candlestick was in existence.
I would guess, and this is just a guess, it would have been one of the Mariucci years.
30 years ago, it was 1989.
Wow. Well, I was close.
1989. This team hasn't started 2-0 with both wins coming on the road since 1989. If they were 2-0, it would turn the home opener at Levi's Stadium 2 Sundays from now into the biggest 49ers game at that stadium that they've ever played, even more significance than the stadium home opener, which they went out and they lost to the Chicago Bears.
And one half of the stadium would still be empty because it would be 89 degrees and people would not want to French fry themselves.
You think?
Yeah.
I think 2-0 might fill it.
No.
Where this team's been.
2-0 with
this. They'll announce it.
Steelers? Cool.
Yeah.
Because the Steelers put butts in seats, and Steelers fans ain't worried about the sun block or how hot it is to watch a football game.
But you're still gonna have people who are not gonna sit on a plastic chair for 4 hours. I mean, and that's a stadium construction thing, not a football thing.
Yeah, no, by the way, you're doing my bit.
You didn't tell me what your bit was. No. I only just answered the question.
No, you're right though. But 2-0 home to the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you can't have the best crowd and atmosphere that you've ever had in that stadium, I don't know if that stadium's got a shot. I mean, it'd be just as bad as the Rolling Stones saying, we didn't like it, we might not come back, which, by the way, they did today. You can look that up.
Oh, God.
Google Rolling Stones review Levi's Stadium.
That place can't catch a break.
It ain't pretty.
I'll tell you when they will fill the place. If they are 9-2 and it's November, and you don't have to worry about the hyperheated seats. Because at that point, you know, people can always wear a jacket, but they're not going to take off layers of skin off the backs of their legs for a football team. They want to sit in relative comfort. And November is more likely to give them relative comfort in that spot than the middle of September. That's all I'm saying. It's a meteorological fact.
Sorry, I had to look up the Rolling Stones thing. It's the Santa Clara that they're crushing, not the stadium, for what it's worth. But access to the stadium,
right?
Basically.
It's what you're allowed to do.
Exactly.
If you put your stadium in the middle of someone's neighborhood that isn't pro football, like the way,
or pro Stones, apparently.
You know, they're very happy to have Lombardi, the Lambeau Field, right? And like they'd never move it. They're very happy that it's there. I don't think anyone in Santa Clara actually voted for that or wanted it there. Anyway,
tough times.
The back end of the schedule is so brutal. They could go 9-2 and then lose 6 in a row at the end of the year.
They for sure could.
That's how rough.
Well, they could only lose 5 in a row.
Yeah, 5 in a row. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry to be pedantic, but that's the only reason I'm here.
Before you start assuming that, hey, if they get off to a really good start or not, I guess that's negotiable. And we all know that the rest of the schedule is going to be really rough at the back end. So you'll have to get fat in the middle of the schedule. There is one overlying fact. You could say this isn't an indicator of what's about to happen. But before you start assuming that the 49ers are going to get robust, fat, and enjoy a win record, or at least around a 500 record, by getting thick and high on the hog in wins in the month of October, Kyle Shanahan is 0-9 in the month of October. A lot of reasons going into that, but he is 0-9. I mean, why is not the scenario here. It's just he is 0-9. In October. So you better win early before the bye, because there's nothing easy waiting for you really at any point in time of the schedule, whether it's the schedule making it hard on you, your own history making it hard on you, your own stadium making it hard on you, your own injuries making it hard on you.
And, you know, somebody asked the question on the text line, did the league throw the Niners a bone with a semi-easy schedule? The thing about their schedule, it's not the hardest schedule in the world. The league doesn't throw bones. Its schedule is determined by your previous year record, so you get an easier schedule when you go 4-12. But I actually think,
unless you're the Raiders,
I actually think the Niners got a bit of a tough deal that most of their easiest games are on the road. I mean, obviously they get the Cardinals at home as well, because that's a division opponent. But Washington, the first two games to start the season are arguably their two easiest. Washington should be an easy one. One of the Cardinals game should be easy ones, and one of those is obviously on the road. It's not a great... The home teams they get, who weren't as good last year as they are this year, it's like the Packers and the Panthers. Those are pretty tough games at Levi's. So the schedule... It's not as favorable as it seems if you just look at the list of teams that they're playing.
There aren't a lot of easy games in the NFL, but if you do have one that you might agree is easy, better it be at home than on the road, and that really doesn't appear for the Niners at any point in time. And by the way, welcome to 5 o'clock.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.